Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Perestivopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priest. My name is Father Ted Perestivopoulos, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg in Calgary. Father, how's it going?
I'm okay.
Yeah. Pictures that you posted from Scrambling, that was really awesome. We were above the cloud line.
Friday, that was super cool. I'd always seen pictures like that, like when people are up. I seen the one on the east end of Eeyore, which is one I'd done before. I was doing Baldy. I went to the full traverse, and I knew that it was going to be foggy in the morning, and then it'd go away. But it was like a warm fog. It was pretty cool. And the way it would, if I lived in an older culture, I would think it was like ghosts coming out of the ground. Like it was super, super cool. And then the higher would go and come away, and they got super thick. So I just tried to be careful because I'd read an article that some girl had died on the east end of Eeyore. The east end of Rundle. Because the fog. So I was like, okay. So mm-hmm. I'd been on this mountain before. It was only like a little bit less than 8,000 feet, but I went up the ridge, stayed on the ridge. And then, I guess the clouds were low and the fog was high. And it was super cool. I couldn't do the full ridge. I finally scrambled down the side and where I was supposed to connect, I could see like maybe 15 feet, I'm guessing, in front of me. And I was like, oh, I'll climb back up and do this the rest another day. I cannot see to the extent I want to be able to see to feel comfortable going further. Maybe I could have pushed through, but it's always better to be safe. So
100%, 100%. Since you don't carry a transponder.
Well, up there I had cell service. It was weird. Near the bottom of the mountain, I didn't. But then halfway up, my cell phone was working. It was fine. So
well, yeah, you were at the highest point in the area, right? So
yeah,
nice. Well, we don't have we have some time today, but we want to get going a little bit because we have a kind of a big topic, and of course, everybody knows what's going on with the world today. Well, most people do, and so you know we see not only the war in Ukraine, which has been going on for forever now, but now we have this kind of new conflict erupting in the Middle East. Nothing new, unfortunately. But we have this whole war now happening between, it's not exactly a war like most people think of, because, you know, most wars are usually between, you know, states or, you know, countries, right? Whereas in this particular situation, we have, you have a war happening between a state of Israel, and more of a group that runs a particular group of people, as opposed to like a country, right? Hamas, right? And also the Gaza Strip there, right? Which is the part of the Middle East there that houses the Muslim population, right? Of the Palestinian population. And so, of course, everybody's talking about it. For us in our podcast, I thought that it'd be good to not talk specifically about only the conflict, because I think everybody's been talking about that and everybody's got different opinions. And we have opinions, I have opinions, you have opinions. Sometimes we don't agree, even you and I, about all the kind of the geopolitical region, things like that. And there's so many different aspects that we can talk about, but I did think that it was important to kind of touch on it, because we've discussed on this podcast before, this idea of, you know, war, peace, struggle, defense, personal defense of one's family, defense of one's, tribe, I guess you could say, or group or countries, and you know, the kind of different things that implies, especially for Orthodox Christians in our modern day, and also how it also looked like for ancient Christians and how they dealt with conflict. And that's where I really want to touch a little bit on it, on kind of what your thoughts are on all kind of new conflict that's happening, and then also maybe talk a little bit about, as much as we can, about what an Orthodox Christian would do in this particular situation, or what kind of the Orthodox approach would be to kind of defending oneself against, I don't want to use the word enemy, although there are enemies, of course, in the world, people who want to do us harm for whatever the reason may be. Like, how would we try to deal with it, or what would be the appropriate? This is, of course, is going to be an interesting conversation. Thank God nobody listens to this podcast, so we can't get canceled. But I'll let you start. Like, what are some of your initial thoughts, the stuff that you've been seeing, and I don't know, have you been thinking about anything like this?
I don't really think about these things. I think about it because of the UFC fighter Belal Muhammad posts about it, right? Because he supports Palestine but not Hamas, right? People make that distinction.
Sure.
Obviously, he's a Muslim, so he posts a lot of things. But otherwise, like, to start off, I would just say, like, I'm a non-interventionist, with like, because I'm a libertarian, so I don't think any tax dollars that come from this country should go to anything outside of this country, right? And to clarify, here's an example, right? I don't think any money should go anywhere, but like, on Saturday, my parish hall was used by the Ukrainians of Calgary Association, right? So that is like a voluntary association of people, Ukrainians in Canada, who are raising money to send to Ukraine for medical supplies and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, they're individuals. It's a group of individuals.
That's what it should be. That's a subset, I guess, of libertarianism, I guess you could say, where everything is voluntary. Voluntarism, right? Everything should be voluntary. If you want to give money to something, feel free. But it shouldn't come from...
But as a country, yeah.
Yeah, because think about it. It's very clear, if Western values, let's say, support Israel, like at the government level, there's a very clear failing of globalism and multiculturalism in Canada, because there are protests all across this country in favor of Palestine, right? Tons, like,
also some for,
yeah, but not to the same side, but not to
the 100%, not to
the sizes and the things that you can hear them saying on video is unbelievable. That they're just there, like Montreal, that's crazy. Mississauga, right? Some of these you're seeing.
Yep.
So it's like, so these people pay taxes, right? And then the government's going to take their tax money and send it to their opponents of the people that they don't support. Like, just from that point, it's weird, right?
I would have, on that point, I would agree with you. I think that, we pay taxes here. I know this sounds callous, or it sounds like we don't care. I don't think that's it at all. I think that the whole premise of paying taxes to a country, like, you live wherever you live, you're paying your taxes, and there's a social contract between yourself as an individual, as a citizen, and the government, that you are paying those taxes to be able to run the particular country that you live in, social services, infrastructure, medical care, whatever, you know, whatever we've decided on and what we've voted on, right? And so I agree with you. So when it comes to foreign policy, it's a really complex issue, and you get into really dangerous territory, because now, like you said, you have governments who are making decisions internally without asking their people, right, to go abroad and to, like, I know the claim is to serve, right, which is really what it is, even though sometimes it's like to serve our own interests, right?
Oh,
like, we like to look altruistic and say, oh, we're doing this for humanitarian reasons, we want to help people. But really, when it comes down to it, all countries are going to look for their own interests first. So all they're doing is I don't want to use these loaded terms, you know, like, some people would say, well, it's a form of colonialism, because they're just extending their influence, right, in other places of the world that they have no business being in, right, for the good of themselves. Other people say, well, no, we're doing humanitarian things to help ease the suffering of people. And the question is, okay, well, yes, you can ease humanitarian problems. You can, but you, like you said, you can do that through individual programs and individual companies that do that. Like, World Vision, whatever, different charities, right, that are run. You can give your money and you can buy food and get foreign aid. Governments don't need to do that. Individual companies and individual organizations can kind of go in and help out when they're suffering, right? I think when governments are doing it, there's something else at play there, right? There's geopolitical issues, right? So I would agree with you there. And kind of to follow up with that, like, we're not going to solve any problems here on this podcast, right? But we were talking about this before we went on, and it's like, it's very logical that people who are from the respective region, whether they be Palestinian, whether they be Israeli, that they're going to side with their sides because this is human nature, right? They're going to side with their people because they have this pull and this, connection to that area and to the people that it represents, right? But since you brought up this idea of like, government's not getting involved, it's like, I think it's really important to remember if like people like study history, which doesn't, right? And people on social media and the legacy media news outlets, they reduce everything to black and white. If you study history and look at like the history of the Middle East, especially the Transjordan area, this whole area that's kind of like in dispute right now, and all this area, you'll see that it was foreign interests that kind of initiated this whole problem. Because pre-World War I, it was the Ottomans, right? And the Ottomans were, of course, a Muslim regime, but they weren't Arabs. The Turks are different, right? Like the Turks are a different kind of group of people, and they controlled that whole area. And then when the Turkish Empire collapsed, like our 30-second history lesson here, right? The Turkish Empire collapsed in World War I, right? The Brits came in, the British came in, and controlled that whole area, right? Everywhere. What's Jordan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, United Arab Emirates, all that area. Modern-day Israel, Gaza, West Bank, all that stuff was controlled by the Brits, right? And the Brits were double-dealing, right? The Brits were, like, promising. They're like, oh, okay, well, we have Arab Muslims here in this area who are kind of like living in sporadically, and we have a bunch of Jewish people as well who are coming and are fleeing oppression from other places, Russia, Eastern Europe, things like that, anti-Semitism that rose in the 19th century, and people want to go back to their ancestral homeland, right? Whether we agree with that or not, as far as Orthodox Christians, is not my point, because I don't think we can really, it's really fruitful to get into the, at least on this podcast, to get into the debate of whether religiously Jewish people have a right to that land or not. As Christians, do we disagree with it or agree with it? That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about politically speaking and geopolitically. The British people, the British Empire, was double dealing. They promised things to the Arabs. They essentially promised the same piece of land to the Arabs and to the Jews, right? And this is where you have this kind of like problem, this type of two-state solution, which has been floated since World War I, right? And this is kind of like set up. So it was foreign interest that kind of, put the gears in motion, I guess you could say, that wasn't either Arab or, or Israeli, right? And then of course all the other stuff that came from there. So, it's a big mess right now. And I don't know, it's like a lot of people are sounding off on it, but I was thinking about this from an Orthodox point of view, like, it's interesting. It's very complex. Orthodox Christians who live there in that area, because that area a long time ago was predominantly Christian, right? So, before even Islam existed, right? Islam is end of 6th, beginning of 7th century, right? So it's like they're late to the game when you think about, world religions, I guess you could say, right? Christians were already in that area, living in those areas, praying in those areas for a good almost 600 years before Islam even existed, right? So, and of course, and Jewish people as well, with some conflicts between the communities, but also living in peace as well. So, Christians are still there, although albeit in a minority, right? So there's Christians who live in the state of Israel. There are no Christians in Gaza, but there are Christians in the West Bank, because we have our holy sites there. Bethlehem is there, right? Predominantly, which used to be a predominantly Christian city. 80% used to be 80% Christian when I visited there in 1996, which is not that long ago, right? When I visited again in 2010, it's predominantly Muslim now. It's 80% Muslim. So the demographics have changed. A lot of people have been pushed out, right? As in most countries, like what happened in Iraq, it happened in Syria with ISIS and all those kind of things, right? So, we have people there who are kind of living between these two groups fighting it out, the Palestinians and the Israelis. And then I always say, like, the Christians are kind of like the sand between two stones, right? And they're getting kind of like squeezed out, right? Because that's what happened. Like, historically, the Christians have been fleeing that area because they just can't handle the conflict, right? So I don't know. Like, we've talked so much on this podcast about the idea of defending oneself and is violence appropriate and is it ever appropriate, things like that. And I just want that's kind of like what I wanted your thoughts on. Like, you know, in the past, we've talked about with multiple people on the podcast that, you know, even as Christians, like, you know, the idea of defending one's family, children, you know, like somebody's going to hurt you, whatever, that could be an acceptable idea from a Christian point of view. Does that translate the same to nations, right, or not?
I don't know. I don't think it does anymore, because modern, like, because people would say, oh, what about the independence of Greece? That's different. If we're talking about modern,
what about the what? Sorry,
the independence of Greece, right? Okay,
because we're talking about how is that different?
Because modern nation states have ties to, like, the industrial military complex, like Lockheed Martin. Like, if you saw all the someone posted, I think it was Drew Weatherhead. He had posted on his other Instagram account a screenshot of all the, I guess, the shares of the stocks going up when the war started. Like, there's a vested interest in these external groups for these things to occur, right? Whereas, and then before there was this massive industrialization of war, then maybe you could make these type of arguments. But now there's other conflicting interests that have unethical.
I agree with you. However, just to give you a little pushback, just a little bit of a nudge, is that even at the time of the War of Independence of Greece in 1821, which started and it lasted, it wasn't just like suddenly we're independent, right? It took like a good almost 100 years, right, to kind of fully free Greece. Even then, even though there was not this, you know, we didn't have the Industrial Revolution, it was starting, but, you know, it hadn't kind of come to fruition until the turn of the century. You did have political interests and you had philosophical interests, right? So there was a vested interest, for example, of the Western, like, you know, where did the ideas of revolution come? Well, they came from like bourgeoisie, you know, upper middle class Greeks who were able to leave the Ottoman occupied Greece. And where did they go to study? They went to the West, right? They went to the West. They went to France. They went to Italy, right? They went to Germany. And they went to these places and they studied, and especially Greeks who came out from France with, like, it was really, historically speaking, it's pretty much agreed upon that it was the French Revolution that also spawned, like, the ideas of the French Revolution spawned ideas of revolution in Greece. So they carried these kind of ideas from the West back into Greece and kind of spurred, right, this idea of a Greek state, which was kind of foreign to the Greeks in the past, because before the Ottoman Empire, we had the Age of Empires, right, with the Byzantine Empire. So you had regions, of course, you had countries, you had nationalities, I guess you could say, but you didn't really have states as we have today, you know, like modern Europe and things like that. That's a product of post-Ottoman rule, right? Kind of the Balkan Wars and things like that. So this was an imported idea, and there were vested interests of the West to kind of have Greece, you know, uprise and by that also have the Balkans uprise against the Ottoman Empire to reduce the power of the caliphate, right? So one could say, that there were some vested interests there, not to say that it was a bad thing what Greece did, right? But it's murky, right? It's not so clean cut, right? And there were definitely vested interests, right?
Yeah, but here's a good example then. This is a better example then. When the Canadian government came to my homeland, right, and my people put up the two resistances, there's no financial incentive for companies to make money off of weapons of mass destruction and killing people and stuff like that. It was just...
And please tell the Métis Nation, right?
So, yeah, the Métis Nation, right? Louis Riel, Gabriel Dumont, the Red River Resistance, and then the Resistance,
the Great Plains,
Tosh. Right, it was of the people, from the people defending themselves, more the way, more similar to way you would your own family, not a politician. Sure. Even though, yeah, you would argue that if you accept Louis Riel as a politician or whatever, depending on your view. But now it's different. You have these politicians who are making decisions, sending people to war, right? Spending tax dollars that aren't theirs to spend. So it's a much different dynamic. Not that.
Yes.
Ultimately, I would say they're both wrong, right? But we live in a fallen world, so you have to make a decision, like the lesser of two evils.
Well, this, yeah, and I think this is also at the crux of it. Like, we live in a fallen world. We were talking before we started recording, where it's like, you know, the early Christians. What do the early Christians do? They turn the other cheek, right? It was lambs to the slaughter. It was this is how they conquered the world, Christianity, right?
Yeah,
but it's true though. It's like it was nonviolent. It was live by pure example of love and giving and sacrifice. And this was like, even in the Byzantine Empire, where now you have the establishment of a state that favors the church, you still had examples of this idea of Christian martyrdom. And, we talked about this in like pandemics, for example, you know, like where even the Byzantine Empire, you know, you would have, or the early years of the Byzantine Empire, where there were still a lot of pagans still, because the empire as well wasn't all Christian. It took a long time for it to become predominantly Christian, right? So you would have the plague of Saint Cyprian, like of Carthage, you know, which spanned the empire, which might have been a form of bubonic plague as well. And you know, you had pagans who would flee the cities and leave their loved ones to die in the gutters because they were so afraid. And it was the Christians who stayed behind to minister, right?
Yeah,
and the Christians died too.
But also, right? those acts of true Christian living would convert people. Like, that's
100%.
To our listeners, what Father Ted just mentioned about the early Christians. Before recording, I had mentioned an article that David Bentley Hart had written for Commonweal magazine called Christ's Rabble: The First Christians Were Not Like Us. I believe he incorporated that into the introduction to his translation of the New Testament, where he talks about how the first Christians, if we were to meet them, we would essentially be disgusted by them. You know, they didn't care about money. They were economically irresponsible, socially inept, right? They didn't fit they didn't want to fit into society, right? All these things, they were strong and ill. Whereas now, if you're any of these things, we call you a fundamentalist or stuff like that.
Sure.
Right? 'Cause no one, let's be real. No one's converting by the way we live our lives like the pagans did in the past. So.
Yes. That's for sure, right? Because we look too much like everybody else,
yeah.
Right? Like, this is something we were talking about again. Maybe we should have been just recording that whole conversation we had before the podcast started. But it's like the outcry, right? It's like you see that. I was listening to what podcast was I listening to? Oh, Patrick Bet David, right? PBD. You know that podcast?
Who?
PBD.
Oh, Bet
David.
Church of the Eternal Logos?
Is that No. He's a political commentator.
Oh, sorry.
Anyways, he's
David Patrick.
Yeah, he'll talk to anybody, right? He's very much a little bit like Joe Rogan. Like, he'll talk with a lot of different people, different views, right? And and they were talking about, like, they had a recent podcast where they were talking about and they had I think Charlie Kirk on there, right? Who's a very conservative, you know, Christian kind of commentator, right? And they were saying that, you know. And one of his co-hosts, who's Jewish, he was like saying, he's like, yeah, the number one persecuted faith right now in the world is Christian, right? People don't know that unless you got to look it up. If you look it up on UNESCO, U.S. State, the world, UN, like, they all say the same thing, right? That the number one burden by far as numbers of Christians who are killed. We're not talking about just ousted from their territories, or, you know, their homes are stolen, or they have to like become refugees. Although, the amount of refugees just in the last like 20 years, right? The majority have actually been Christians, not Muslims, right? Like, so, or not Jewish, right? Like, so people, when they think of oppression, they think of refugees, because this is what the media shows in the West, right? They think of what? They think of Muslim refugees, right? Because, you know, we had the whole ISIS thing. We had, you know, all these migrants, the migrant issue, remember in 2015, coming to Greece, all this stuff, and predominantly Muslim. And so they were covering all this. But nobody really covers the Christian thing for some reason. And also the Christians themselves, especially in the West, don't advocate. They don't advocate, right? Now, whether we should or not is a different story. I'm just saying, though, that the reality is that, you know, we don't advocate for the atrocities that are happening in the East. The reasons for that, could be religious, like from our point of view. It could also be political, perhaps because the majority of the killings are happening in certain types of countries that we don't want to talk about because it's not politically kosher to talk about it here in Canada. But the reality is that it's like it goes unnoticed, right? So, and that doesn't mean to say that the stuff that we see on the news right now is not important either, and that the people who are dying and people are suffering is not horrible. But this is like, you know, it's interesting, like what the West chooses to focus and like put laser focus on, right? We were talking about Ukraine nonstop. No, now nobody's talking about Ukraine. It went away. Now it's all, yeah. The news cycle is all Palestinian / Israeli conflict, right?
Yeah.
It's a little fake for me. It's where the money is, right? And where what drives clicks, right? And
It's like when people make those memes about the that one gray character, and it's like, I support the current thing. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's very superficial. Yeah. Most people don't know.
Yeah. Well, this is the, I don't know. I think as like Christians here, like in the West, like we become so complacent, just mainstreamy. What's the word, right? Like, and we don't, like Christians used to kind of like speak the truth about things, right? Regardless of what the consequences would be, right? There are some people who do it today, but I don't know. I think it's a sad commentary. Like no one's talking about it. I haven't seen any discussions, even on what's going on right now. Like, have you seen any kind of official statements from Orthodox churches? No. Nobody talks about it.
Even His Holiness Patriarch Bartholomew put out something, and I read it. Didn't really say anything, but then again, like, I don't really know what he can say with his situation there. So,
yeah, because he's supposed to say.
That's the thing too. Like all these politicians make all these posts on Twitter. It's like last winter, I was coming home from jiu-jitsu by my house, and there's a guy walking past me. Wearing jeans. I can't remember. I hope he had shoes. He definitely didn't have a shirt, but he had a sleeping bag. Right? Mm-hmm. There are thousands and thousands of kids in this city where I live who don't have breakfast in the morning. Right? There are people who come to my church and get Walmart gift cards and bus tickets from me. It's like, I don't see politicians posting about that on Twitter. I don't see the bishops or patriarchs making statements about that. And those are the things that matter. We got abortion issues. We got the child grooming going on in our schools and the crazy stuff now. And there's no statements about those things. But as soon as there's something that you make kind of a neutral platitude about, or at least pick a side on, then there's something. But the things that really matter here in the daily lives of citizens of this country who pay taxes, whether they want to or not, are clearly not addressed. I saw last night on Reddit under R Calgary, I think it was R Calgary or Canadian Financial Advice, but it was definitely someone in Calgary. They're like, my mortgage is up double and my husband lost his job and I just started a new job. No, they're in Toronto. So that's where it was. Even worse. Right.
Well, it's more believable too, right? Yeah.
So it's like not only gonna lose your house, you're not even gonna be able to afford rent anywhere. Right. So it's like,
well, I know, I live here. I know. I live in a tiny apartment. Yeah. I'll never move because it's ridiculously expensive. I agree with you. And it's just I was listening to Joe Rogan this morning actually, and he had like Jimmy Carr, you know, the comedian. And at one point they were saying how, you know, Jimmy Carr, he grew up in England, and he goes, yeah, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have like smartphones. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have any of that, because he's like 50 now. Right. So he was like my generation, and you're like a little bit earlier. But, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have smartphones. I didn't have internet until I was like 14 years old, 15. Like, we didn't have it. Like, it was a novel thing. Right. I didn't have a cell phone until I graduated high school. And they weren't smartphones. They were like the green screen flip phones that only actually called. There wasn't even text yet, right? So I remember those days, and he was saying that, you know, comparison, he goes, is like the worst thing. It's like, we didn't know what other people had. we didn't care. It was, ignorance was bliss, right? It's like, you know, we lived in like kind of a lower middle class, not poor, but like not great, you know, little town. And we were all in the same economic situation and we were happy. Now people are like on the TikTok and this and that, and they're watching everybody else and mansions and this and that. And it's the same. Yeah. And it's the same thing with the news cycle as far as like what we care about. And what we care about. Instead of caring about your own community and caring about the problems within your own community and your own neighbor that you can actually affect change, right? We care more about these big geopolitical problems, which of course are problems, but they're local problems somewhere else, right? And if, and also one could say that I personally think that if those people, you know, wherever they are, whether it be Ukraine, Middle East, wherever the fights are happening, right? They know that the world is watching. So that's also politicized. That's also used to the advantage, right? Like there's a game that's played, right? It's like, we're going to war now. So it's like, who's going to win the court of public opinion? Who's going to get more aid to come in from different countries? And, you know, so now there's a propaganda war that's going to happen, right? Of, you know, we're going to either mask what's really going on or maybe expose what's really going on, whatever it is, whatever side people are on, whatever's happening. But definitely we don't get the full picture because we're not there and we're getting it through a filter. Mm-hmm. And it's, and people are just like losing their minds over this, where it's like you said, it's like people are starving down the street, but we're fighting on Twitter.
Well, yeah, it's like you'll be like, you can make a meme of it. You have someone on the street, let's say by a coffee shop, and they're like looking at their phone and they're outraged about like, oh, this political group in this country is doing this to this other political group in this other country. Meanwhile, right beside them, there's like a starving person, right?
Yes.
That's what I mean. It's like, yeah. I like to quote Fight Club all the time. So just this, if you remember, disregard what Brad Pitt, Tyler Durden says about oxygen masks and airplanes in that one scene. And just think of it this way. In an airplane, you put on your own mask first, right?
Yes.
That's what you do. Like Jordan Peterson, you make your bed, clean your room, clean your house, clean your yard, clean your neighborhood. Like, that's how you do things. Like, the only way you can change the world. Like,
ownership.
Yeah. The only way you're going to change the world is by changing yourself. Right?
Yes.
That's the way. Other, anything other than that is just, it's just a temporary, you're helping some people, but you're helping some people at the expense of others. But you're always going to be doing that because you're just one person, right? The governments are inept. They have their own things are going by. Yeah. It's horrible. All around. Like that's.
Yeah. I'll give you one more example because we have a little bit of time, but only like about 10 minutes left, but, And this will be an example from the situation, but again, it's not like me blaming either side or whatever, but I'll give you an example of what's going on, for example, in Gaza, right? So in Gaza, you have this population of like about 2.something million Muslims, right? And they're represented by this group called Hamas, which is a terrorist organization. I'm not afraid to say, because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
They definitely don't represent all of them. Hamas itself was voted in 2007, I believe, by 44.5% of the vote. So that's half, right? Take away people who can't vote, things like that. It's about half the population, right? So that's still big. That's a big percentage, but the other half didn't vote for them, right? And ever since then, there's been no elections because they killed all the rivals, right? So after they got elected, they killed the opposing party members, right? And then they've been running it since, because Israel pulled out of Gaza, right, in 2005. And so it's like, okay, you're left to your own devices, right? So Hamas as an organization, not as a terrorist group, but as an organization, is responsible, for example, for not just what they claim to be their mandate, which is Islamic Jihad, which is exactly what is in what is called their covenant from 1988, that their covenant with the people and their kind of official statement of their mission statement, but they're also tasked with providing for their people, right? So they're tasked with giving free water, have infrastructure, water, electricity, infrastructure, medical care, all that kind of stuff that a government does for their people. That's their job because they're the elected officials, right? And so for the last, what is it now? 17 years, 18 years, we're 2023 now, almost 2024, right? They did none of that. And the reason why they didn't do that was not only because they were driven to do something else, but because they're counting on foreign aid. They're counting on foreign aid. They know that the West, who they hate, they say, we hate you. Death to America, right? Yeah. Death to the West, right? And it's like, but they're counting on foreign aid. So that the Gaza Strip is the most heavily dependent on foreign aid out of any place in the world, right? For food, for water was shipped in for free from Israel, and electricity, they weren't providing it themselves, right? Indeed, they prohibited their own people from digging wells, okay? Which is crazy when you think about it, right? So, because they know they're going to get free. So where am I going with this whole thing? This is not a bashing of Hamas kind of thing. This is an example of when, like these, like what you were saying, it's like along the lines of when other countries are providing a lot of free stuff, right? Foreign aid, humanitarian relief, all this kind of stuff. Okay, from one side, it's good. From the other side, though, to a lot of groups in the world, you are enabling bad behavior, right? You're enabling groups, for example, terrorist group, to say, okay, well, we're going to get free food, medical care is going to get flown in, all this kind of stuff, because other countries don't want people to die, right, or suffer, right? So we're going to take the money that we do have given to us, or pipes that are actually given to us, or cement that's actually given to us, we're going to use it for other bad things. For example, like building tunnels or building rockets and things like that, which is what they've done for the last like 17 years, right? As opposed to feeding their people, right? And then people wonder why these people are living in squalor. They're like, they have nothing. And then something like this happens where there's a conflict where there is no infrastructure. And of course, there's a humanitarian crisis. But the crisis is like, well, where were the authorities, their local authorities, to be able to provide this infrastructure? Well, they didn't, because they were. So I'm saying, if there was no foreign aid, if there were no organizations like the UN, things like that, or UNICEF, different groups that fly in aid and things over the last 17 years, right? Probably what would have happened is they would have taken care of themselves, because they would have had to, or they would have starved.
Yeah.
Like if nobody gave you anything, it's like, here's your land, okay, live, right? They would have been forced to like have better business, right? Bring in investments, like, you know, have infrastructure. All the stuff. They would have had to, because they're like, if not, my people are all dead.
Yeah. Right? It reminds me of disregard Canada's history, but just the reality of you had, let's say, Ukrainian settlers or German settlers come to Canada, right? Okay. Yeah. They were lied to. They were told no one lived here, but of course people lived here, but they were here and they were homesteaders, right? And it was like, you get this land, you have X amount of time to do something with it. Canada still has homesteading laws where there's certain plots and you can do this, but you have X amount of time to, but it's all you have to do it.
You have to work it. You have to work the land. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And that's like my criticism. I think most people have caught on. That's my criticism in life of government help. Right. Of course, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. So there's always some type of social contract. No one ever is truly by themselves, except for probably like those first homesteaders in Canada or places like that. But
and there are situations as well, like where, for example, earthquakes, right?
Yeah.
Like natural disasters, where I got no problem with foreign aid there. Like, look what happened in Afghanistan. Nobody's talking about them. They had the massive earthquakes. How many thousands died there, right? Mm-hmm. Because all their mud huts fell because they had they didn't have proper infrastructure, right? And so that was a natural disaster. That wasn't any government doing it to them. You know, there's a massive earthquake. You have all these people who have died. They need help. I got no problem with being neighborly, right? And helping in those situations. But I think that countries should also be a little more discriminating of, well, what is this? What is the humanitarian situation? What's causing it, right? And are we enabling it? That's what I'm trying to say. Like, so I'm more along the lines of what you were saying before. It's like more on the libertarian side. It's like, well, you should kind of hold off. Yes, there's an earthquake, there's a tsunami, there's a natural disaster, and we all pull together as human beings and we help. Okay, nope.
Yeah.
But not when like these situations are kind of caused, and they're caused over and over and time again by neglect of the local authorities and the local people in power. And then, you know, we know that they're planning and they're depending on, you know, other people to pay the bills and to bring the food in, all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
That was, that's a good point, because at the dinner I was at on Saturday in my parish hall, the Ukrainian dinner, they had a speaker when I first got there. I think it was on video or it was a recording, I can't remember. But he mentioned that, so God bless him. He mentioned, I know a lot of people are always concerned about the corruption in Ukraine. And he spoke about it, and he said, so that's kind of his job to make sure the money that you're voluntarily donating is going to where it's actually going, not to all the things that people criticized Ukraine for before the war, right? That no one
yeah,
talks
because
about.
It was, yeah. Ukraine was the most corrupt country in Europe, right?
Yeah. So that was a good
the
point.
Most.
That's if you're voluntarily giving money, you want to know where it's going, and it's going to the right. If you're donating money for medical supplies, hopefully it's going to medical supplies and not for guns, right? Or to someone's pocket account.
But and even then it's very difficult, right? Because we're not there, right? And it's a very far place. And it's very hard to know what's going on between the moment you give something and then where is the final destination, right?
Well, that's why all these situations in the world are very difficult for me, because I pretty much am at the point where I don't believe anything that the news organizations post. Like, unless it's local and I can, like, oh, this hiker died on the scramble, this, right? Something I can, other than that,
you can verify.
Yeah, other than that, because even there was things like during COVID when I was staying with my in-laws, and my mother-in-law has the TV on all day in her house, right? And she'd have the news on, and they would say things on the news that I knew was not true, and it was local stuff about the situation. I was like, this is inaccurate. So now imagine what at a global scale, when there's interest and propaganda, you can't believe anything someone's telling you. Well, I guess you can do whatever you want, but so I'm at the point where it's like, I'm not saying that someone's lying, I'm just saying I don't know. So I don't know anything. That's why Twitter is good. Twitter, you can get a lot of good, you can get both sides, you can see video, and you can get now with the community notes, like Ben Shapiro, didn't he
get
post
corrected.
Yeah, he posted something, because you know he has an emotional interest, clearly. He needs to chill a bit. But the community notes showed, like, there was something he posted where dead babies or whatever, or a burnt baby. And like, well, no, you can, it's like, dude, you could just put this in a search engine and find out it was actually AI generated, right? So that's what's good now through, you know, crowdsourcing. You can have a community note on Twitter to say whether something's accurate or not accurate, or to the best of everyone's collective knowledge, right?
Yeah, that was a great addition that Elon Musk did when he took over Twitter, right? He had the community note, wanted people to be able to correct each other in real time.
Yeah.
So
even on
I'm
ads,
not, I'm not
have, you'll even see it on ads. They'll have ads sometimes for games and stuff, and like, this is not the actual game footage. Like, so it's like, you can put something out there, but you know sometimes people put things not to deceive. Like, that's, I'm sure that's not what Ben Shapiro's point was. He was just himself misled and didn't check it, and then he posted it, which could happen to anyone. So but at the end of the day, I don't know, it's just I think it has to be clear, like, I don't support the governments of any country that are doing this. It's like, you feel for the civilians of all these countries. That's what it is, and it's just horrible.
More suffering.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't really don't think there's a solution. I really, really don't.
That's another issue altogether, which is beyond our scope today.
Yeah, for whether it's Israel, Palestine, even like the Russia-Ukraine thing, I don't think there's any solutions to these things, especially with the positions certain people in power have taken. Like, well, if those are the positions, then there's no solution, or it's going to be a very bad solution. So,
yeah. Yeah.
When people dig their heels in.
Well, I think that's the thing, right? And there's different ideologies, different worldviews altogether. I don't, it's going to be a problem, right?
But I guess that's why, you know, we serve liturgy and we pray for the peace. We pray for peace in the world. That's what we pray for every liturgy, right? So.
Yes. And on that note, I know that you have a hard out, like, now. It's 12:30.
Yeah, I have some paperwork.
10:30 for you. But thank you for the. We'll see what happens in the future. Hopefully things will be resolved quick sooner rather than later,
yeah,
as far as the suffering people. And we'll pray for them. And that's all we can do.
Yeah.
Well, till next time, everybody, on that bright note. It's hope everybody's safe and keep training, and we will see everybody in the next couple of weeks. Till then, take care, everybody.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests. Feel free to download us on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or anywhere else you get your content. Check us out on Instagram at The Fighting Priests. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at thefightingpriests@gmail.com. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul.